You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Yeah, that was the wrong music. Now I've got to get Hollings on. Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are and live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all. Joining me on a Tuesday, because he was too tired to join us on Monday, is Alex Hollings.
Pumpkin. What's going on, man? Thanks for letting me postpone yesterday. I appreciate it.
How are you feeling, Pumpkin? Are you okay?
Well, I got to tell you, I could still probably use about 19 hours of sleep.
Whoa!
But I think that's all leftovers from just being a dad for the last few years.
Well, hey, you know what? Get used to it. You only got about another, 20 years to go?
Yeah. I'm hoping that by then I'll stop worrying about my kid in the middle of the night, but that's probably a lost cause.
Oh, it'll only get worse. Wait till they have your car.
Oh, God help me. I'm worried enough when my wife's got my car.
There you go. Yeah. What do you? And the first question they ask is, how do I sync my phone to the Bluetooth?
Okay. Look. Oh, man. Like, how do I make YouTube a play through the center console? You know, I don't know because I've never worked on that.
Exactly. Like, you'll sleep a lot better once you hear that.
When I get in the car, I'll readily admit that my phone is blowing up constantly. It doesn't matter what time of day because I work with a lot of guys that are stationed in Asia or Europe, so they seem to think that I operate on their schedule just like people in America assume I operate on their schedule. And so my phone is never not going off. So when I'm in the car, I try my best to bury it under as much shit as I possibly can, just so that I can ignore it for a little while.
You know what? I tend to be one of those people. I respect nobody's right to privacy or anything else when I'm when I think I should speak with them. I think that I should speak with them.
That's the officer in you.
I did that long before I was an officer. I had no.
As an enlisted guy, you're always a little nervous about the person you're about to call. You're like, I hope it's a good time for them.
Are you kidding me? Enlisted, it's
a good time for enlisted, you because it's a good time for me.
Enlisted people, first of all, they're normally inebriated. Now, that may shock you, but.
I don't dispute that. That's fair. All right. And we're starting off on common ground.
And I don't think that they give it that much thought. Now, my whole life experience can be wrong, but I don't think it is. And so I think you're dealing in fake news right now.
I think that as an enlisted guy, I'm better suited to tell you what enlisted guys are thinking before they call lieutenant colonels and whatnot.
They don't do that, okay? Because they have no interest in going to the brig. So I think you're spinning yarns here. That's what I think.
I don't know. I think enlisted guys get a bad rap just like millennials. You know, I'm a millennial. I mean, I'm an old-ass millennial.
You're a millennial enlisted guy?
Technically speaking, according to, you know, whatever, I think it was Rand Corporation finally came out with, because you know how these things go. Millennial, just like when we say fifth generation fighter, we all think we know what that means, but the truth is that it doesn't actually officially mean anything. It's just like a term that we all agree to use. But according to, I think the Rand Corporation's assessment of millennials, I made the cut just barely. I'm like an elder millennial.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's pretty impressive.
Weird, though. My brother's considered Generation X, you know, so I'm right on the cusp.
Are you happy about being included in all that?
Well, I'll say this. I think that most millennial hate that you find on the internet actually comes from people that are millennials and don't realize it. You know, it's virtue signaling. Everybody wants to show that they're a hard worker by shitting on this straw man millennial argument. That they're all just looking for safe spaces and crying about their feelings in the corner. The truth of the matter is that the global war on terror has been predominantly fought by millennials. You know, millennials represent the entirety of the volunteer fighting force we have right now, with the exception of some real old guys with a whole lot of weight on their collars. I think that millennials do get a bad rap, yeah. And so I'll take it. I'll take some pride in my millennial label, so that I can help combat that reputation.
You'll take the face shot for the millennials because you want to represent?
Yeah, because I think that there are a lot of hard-working millennials out there that don't get a
good
rap.
God, just stop it already. You do need to go back to sleep, don't you?
We really are. We're a generation of guys that just like...
Which is
really
weird. You're not even in that. You're Gen X, man. You're not. Don't try to be a millennial and make yourself younger than you are. You're not.
But I'll say this. But I see millennials every... Millennials are the guys...
Okay, so do I. But it does...
Footprints every day.
So do I. But it doesn't make me one, bro.
No. But the Rand Corporation made me a millennial. I'm just fighting for the home team.
So you're a victim in all this.
No, if anything, I would actually say it's your generation that's really been victimized by this, you know?
Why? Because but we don't care.
No, you guys care harder than anyone. You guys are the ones writing the op-eds in the New York Times about millennials. You guys are the ones creating the memes about this younger generation not knowing what it is that they're doing. And it's created this fictitious straw man thing that you can compare yourself to, and it allows you to do less and try less hard. Because you can say, at least we're better than those lazy guys that are asking for a safe space and crying about Trump.
Those bastard millennials?
I think that it is the classic, you know, everybody needs a them. Everyone needs a them to compare themselves to. And millennials have become the them for the older generation currently. You know, just like it was before. The greatest generation shat all over the baby boomers. The baby boomers will shit all over millennials. And millennials will... undoubtedly shit all over the reptilian laser children that they eventually have that are made out of Legos and robot parts.
Can you only imagine what the shit show would be like with millennials? Like, you know, you're not really a millennial. Hold on, I've got to give a weather update. I do this thing now called shithole weather updates, and that means that you like send me the weather in, where do you live, what city?
I live in Cumming, Georgia, which is spelled in the most pornographic way you
can. Oh, please.
Cumming, Georgia is where I live.
Named after Larry Cumming, I hope, please.
I really wish that I could tell you that was a joke. It's 100%
true. No, I'm sure it is, but I'm sure that's somebody's surname, yes?
You know, I've never really looked into the etymology of how this place got its name. I always just kind of chuckled when I drove by the sign.
Really? Really? That's, you know what? That's such a horrible indictment of you as a human being. It is.
It's that millennial in me, you know?
It's the wannabe millennial. You're not even actually a millennial. You're like posing as one.
I'm going to look up the dates right now for millennial date ranges here, and I'm going to see. I think I'm going to surprise some listeners when they find out. Millennials are anyone born between 1981 and 1996, which 1981's an older dude now, you know? I mean, 1981's got to be, you're creeping up on 40.
When were you born?
I was born in 85.
So you're solidly a millennial. Is that what you're talking
about? I am solidly in the millennial category. Yeah, the eldest millennials now are around, what, 37? Is that what that math is?
Who tracks shit like that, right? Who, I don't even know. Everything you told me is news.
And this is what I mean, is that somebody said it's between 81 and 96, but that just means somebody said that. You know what I mean? That's the same thing.
So
I've had this argument over time.
Can you cite your source for that?
This one is from Mental Floss that I just clicked on right off
Mental
the bat.
Mental Floss. How would you gauge Mental Floss as a source?
I'm kind of a fan of John. John Green? He runs Mental Floss. I know he is a really bright guy. I can't speak for every one of the writers, but they cite the Pew Research Center.
Well, Pew gets it right more than they get it wrong. All right, let me tell you about Cumming's, Georgia.
Okay, I'm all ears.
It's Cumming, Georgia.
Cumming, Georgia. Yep.
All right. It is in north central Georgia. All right. It was incorporated in 1834 and chartered in 1845. Named for William Cumming. All right. Current mayor is Troy Trumbullo. All right. Do you know Troy?
I don't know him. I know the name, but I don't know
him. The community is commonly thought to be named after Colonel William Cumming. The alternate theory proposed by a local historian posits the name honors Reverend Frederick Cumming, a professor of Jacob Scudder a resident of the area since 1815 who owned land in the present-day downtown. Colonel William Cumming, now how, I mean, like, why is that not a validated fact in the community that calls itself Cumming, Georgia?
I can actually, I have an argument about this, that of why it wouldn't be a validated
fact. Hold on. He was born in Augusta to Thomas and Anne Clay Cumming. He graduated from the College of New Jersey, later Princeton University, studied law in Litchfield, Connecticut. When he returned to Augusta, he bought land and became a planter. He joined the militia, became a captain of an independent company called the Augusta Blues. When the unit was mustered into the regular army for service in the War of 1812, he was commissioned a major, which is the backbone of any military force, in the 8th Infantry. In February of 1814, he was promoted to colonel and named as an adjutant general of the Northern Army. What? Colonel Cumming fought in the St. Louis frontier and the Niagara campaigns. He was cited for gallantry and leadership. He was lightly wounded in November of 1813. Lightly wounded by a 57-millimeter round, okay? So figure that out. Battle of Chrysler's Farm.
It must
farm.
Have just barely skimmed him, otherwise he would have had whatever it hit hacked off.
Exactly. He's later a planner and a politician. An active and outspoken in political arguments, he declined several offices, including election by the state legislature to the United States Senate. In 1822, his strong support of state nullification and his habit of strong criticism led to an ongoing dispute with South Carolina Congressman George McDuffie, who favored deference to the federal government. He met Duffy in a duel and wounded him. The bullet lodged in McDuffie's back.
See, this is the way politicians really got shit done back in the
and
day.
Was
I like,
never
I
removed.
Like dueling politicians.
The wound caused him to limp for the rest of his life. Why you limping, Duff? George? Oh, that son of a bitch coming shot me in the back. And I can't have the bullet removed. Later in life, in 1847, President Polk offered Cumming the rank of Major General to participate in the Mexican-American War. But his age and declining health caused him to turn down the offer. He died in Augusta in 1863. The town of Cumming, Georgia, is named in his honor. Now, why would Cumming, Georgia be named after a guy who lived and died in Augusta?
That's a great question. Yes, one I don't have an answer for.
Well, they haven't. So they have.
But I would consider.
Hold on, I've got to let me finish my news, my weather report.
Oh, you're
right. This is a gal from Alabama. In Alabama, it's still summer. Looking for a high today of 96. No wind, no breeze, no rain.
Same boat here. The air hasn't moved in a week. I swear to God.
Everything is dying. D-Y-E-I-N-G. Now, she's a smart girl. She's just goofing on the whole southern right thing. So you got to be careful with people like that. So there you have it. That is your shithole weather update. And so people send me their weather from all over the country now when I do.
I got to tell you, man, and spending
weather.
The weekend in Virginia, it was no better there either. I was hoping, we've been talking about moving a few hours north so that we're still close enough to see my nephew and my niece, but like maybe get away from the heat and the humidity of Georgia's never-ending summer. But I was up in Virginia all weekend, and it was over 90 and brutal there, too. So I'm not sure that there's anywhere left that's safe.
It was 77 there a few minutes ago.
Ooh, see, maybe Virginia's back in the running, then. Maybe it's back in the fight.
Quantico.
Of course, it's nice and cool now that I'm not on a pistol range anymore, right?
Exactly. 76 degrees in Quantico as of 60 minutes ago.
I recently interviewed for a position in Washington D.C. and because I chose not to take the job, I'm not gonna out the outlet. But I drove through Washington D.C. as a part of that, you know, because I would have been spending a fair amount of time at the Pentagon. And I have to tell you, I don't think that there is a sum of money on God's green earth that you could pay me to live and work in Washington D.C.
I bet there is.
I mean, it would have to be enough that I could dig a tunnel.
I bet there is.
From my home to the Pentagon.
No, you just work. You work from home.
Yeah, maybe I would work from home, but I would still. Yeah. But at that point, I wouldn't live in Washington D.C. I would.
Yeah.
I'd live outside the.
Yeah, you live it outside, and here's the key: you live close to, right? A metro stop. You get on the
metro. You want me, a guy who hates other humans so much that I spend as much of my time as possible in my own fortified basement, You want me to go ride public transportation in Washington, D.C.?
Yes. Well, here's the deal. Here's the trade-off. They pay you a lot of money, and they completely insulate you from the, I'll be graceful, right, the dynamic professional environment that you currently find yourself in. The so
that's fair. Yeah, there's some truth to that.
So the trade-off would be you would be financially, right, and your family financially insulated. You'd be out of the heat of Georgia, right?
You would have, but in order to be financially insulated in Washington, D.C., you would need a much higher sum of money than to be financially
insulated. That's what I'm talking about.
Becoming Georgia.
That's what I'm talking about. If somebody, you know, if somebody makes that offer and rescues you from the heat.
From the heat of Georgia. Man, I got to tell you, it is oppressive.
And
it
the,
really is.
My son's actually down at Fort Benning, which is south of you, yay?
Yeah, it is.
He's,
and I'd imagine even more brutal.
He says it's not the most desirable place to live on the planet. But
this is, it's literally like, I would contend that going outside in Georgia, even now, on October 1st, is kind of like walking into someone's hot fart that won't move.
Stop it.
It is awful. It is like a sweaty armpit. It is. I'm not a fan. I do actually very much like Georgia, but the brutality of its summer is really wearing me thin. I was hoping that by October I could start hiking, you know. But I mean, don't get me wrong, I still do. But my hikes are a lot shorter when it's 96 degrees with 90% humidity than I would prefer them to be.
Yeah, man. You know what? I hate humidity. I've always hated it. I grew up in California. You know,
it is. It's the humidity that kills you. Even in 29 Palms, the heat wasn't that. Don't get me wrong. The heat is taxing.
You can go out on a long hump
right. In 120 degrees with no humidity and make it through all right.
Well, let me give you one better. My Marines, right, in the middle of summer, we'd be stopped to refuel. Or, you know, we'd be going to stop someplace for a couple hours, right, while we're out operating as Charlie Company, Alpha Company, 3rd Light Armored Infantry Battalion at the time, right? Now they call themselves 3rd Light Armored Reconnaissance Battalion. Whatever, dudes. If it helps putting a wig on her, by all means, go ahead. So you're a recon guy now. But I'm doing the same thing. Shut up and color. Anyway, so, you know, you get out, right? You refuel the vehicle. You do your stuff, right? Then you do your at-a-halt checks, right? And then what does the driver and the gunner do in, you know, when you're... Well, one of them is on the vehicle, listening to the radios. The other one goes to sleep. Where? Take your gas mask and lay on the dirt of the desert. All right. And now just know that if it's, let's just say it's 115 out there, between your boot and your knee, it's 10 degrees warmer because it's just the ambient heat. Look over, 5 minutes later, right? Dead asleep in the dry heat, and it's 120 degrees. And they do
I
it
have,
all
I have
the time.
Pictures of me in the field in 29 Palms, sleeping with a boonie cover on.
Right.
You know, when it was probably 100 degrees out, but you don't give a shit.
Right. No. But the humidity, in my opinion, changes all that.
Humidity is oppressive. Right. Heat will ruin your day, I'm sure. But when you add humidity, that's when you start to feel heavy. That's when moving starts to get difficult.
Clothes are soaking wet.
Your clothes get heavy. Yeah. You're soaking wet, and there's no way to be comfortable. If you know, a lot of times when my buddies and I go out for, like, we're going to do, like, a camping hike, you know what I mean?
Right.
We plan to do maybe 10 miles a day, right? We'll hike for 10 miles, you know, take a break, make camp, hang out, have some beers, get some rest, right? 10 miles is not that big a deal with your gear on until... It's 10 miles with your gear and, you know, 3 gallons of air you're absorbing out of the air, or 3 gallons of water you're absorbing out of the air as you hike, you know? It's just slopping off of you at all times.
Right, and you know, to me, the worst is your wet trousers make every step more difficult.
Oh, my God. Chafing is, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I have an ongoing issue with chafing when I hike anyway. It's like
it
a constant
might be a personal,
concern.
Too much personal information, but.
Well, you know, but it's like when you chafe the hell out of the inside of your thighs, it'll make tomorrow's hike just awful. You know what I mean? So I'm always that
how
guy
do
with
you
baby
chafe,
powder.
How do you chafe the inside stuff. Of your thighs if you have pants on?
Oh, well, because once my pants get wet, it's always like that, you know, like that knob in the crotch of your pants. Just
really?
Starts eating a hole in the inside. I don't have a thigh gap like the Instagram girls, you know?
Oh, really?
So my thighs rub, you know what I mean? And I tell you what, it'll ruin a hike. It'll make which should otherwise be a great trip for me off.
Well, if you don't have friction, does that mean you have a thigh gap?
I don't have a thigh gap. That's the problem. Maybe if you don't have friction, it means that you just don't have thunder thighs like I do. I was born with my mother's child-rearing hips. And as a result, my chafing's always a concern for me, you know?
Let me tell you, those are real-world, no-bullshit things that, you know, when you go do that. Here's the millennials. I'm a super junior boomer. See what you started, asshole? Last year of boomers was 1964. It's now the favorite insult of millennials that millennials use on Twitter. Boomers gonna boom.
It's totally true. And I would argue the problem here isn't millennials or boomers. It's human beings just generally are assholes.
Well, I was going to say, you mean boomers, the people that like own their own homes and don't.
Well, yeah, of course boomers own their own homes because they bought them when they cost like $16 and you can buy one with one factory income.
Yeah, that's because they moved where they could get a job and they bought what they could fucking afford. They didn't want to, like, move to New York City and buy somebody's really nice house 2 years out of college.
The economic problem we face in this nation is caused by that generation. Now, I'm not saying it's caused by every member of that generation.
Are you fucking kidding me? You know what? Every problem we've had, the baby boomers overcame that shit. And how did they overcome it? They came it by moving. No, I want the job. I want the job that I want. Okay? I want it now, and I want to be paid a shit ton of money, and I want to live like my parents live when they were extremely successful, not how they lived when they started out.
Fuck no, I won't dispute that. Oh, I definitely think that the younger generation, my younger brother is a great example. You know, he does work hard, but he has a skewed perspective on the world because he's grown up in this idea that the government should provide for you, whereas I grew up, I'm only 7 years older than him, almost 8 years older than him, but I grew up when my family was much poorer, you know. By the time my younger brother was around, my family was doing pretty well. And as a result, he never really had to go wanting, you know. He had good clothes to wear to school. He wasn't embarrassed about having to use hand-me-downs and things like that.
Were you embarrassed?
I was embarrassed all the time at school. You know, when I was born, we lived in a camping trailer. You know, my family did not make very much money when I was born. And we moved around a lot, you know, sometimes because my dad got in some legal trouble, sometimes because my dad was just looking for a better job. So I was always the new kid, and I was always the poor kid. And I would argue that I developed a lot of social skills I wouldn't have otherwise had as a result. But I also developed, like, a sense of value, you know. A new shirt, to me, is a big purchase. Still, you know, even though I make a pretty good living now, I have a lot of trouble spending money on myself. You know, I don't have any trouble spending it on my kid. She's spoiled rotten. But I feel tremendous guilt anytime. If I'm going to go buy myself a new pair of jeans, it'll mess with me, you know?
Really?
My younger brother didn't grow up in that same environment, which I would say is a credit to my parents' hard work.
Right.
But as a result, he and I have very different politics. You know, he thinks that the government should pay for college. I know well that that means we pay for everyone to go to college. The government does not have a source of revenue or income other than us. We are the government's revenue source. I don't think that makes my little brother a bad guy. I think it might.
Contextual.
You know, I can make the argument. But he contextualizes things differently because he's never had to suffer those same challenges. You know what I mean? But that's an important thing, I think, for us to keep in mind when we have political debates, is that my little brother isn't an asshole or a bad guy for being a Bernie Sanders supporter. He has a very different perspective, and it's based on his life experiences,
it's based on this illusion that there's money everywhere and just take it from somebody else. And it's
now I agree with you,
it's all okay. And you look and you say, okay, well, how are you going to pay for that? And why are people that didn't make the choices you made going to pay for you and your choice?
Now that's where I'm going to actually argue with you, because that's a popular Dan Crenshaw argument about
your choice about college. Nobody put a gun to your head. There were cheaper ways to do it. You chose to do it a different way. Why does somebody else have to pay for you? Somebody who didn't make that choice. Explain.
Well,
that to me.
I'll tell you, but I'm going to preface this with I'm playing devil's advocate here because I am not for debt forgiveness of all college loans, nor am I for the government paying for college. But what you're citing here, or what you're talking about, is a really popular meme on the internet. It all started with Dan Crenshaw, who I do like, but he argued that the idea of the taxpayer paying off student loans doesn't make any sense because we're asking for a relatively small percentage of Americans to benefit from tax revenue drawn from the entirety of the American population, and that just isn't fair. The truth is, that is literally the premise of taxes. You know, before I had a kid, I paid taxes that went towards public schools. Whether or not I chose to get my driver's license, I pay taxes towards public roads. Whether or not I call the police, my taxes go towards paying for a law enforcement presence in my community. Whether or not I ever go to space, my taxes go towards building spaceships. Whether or not I ever fight a war, my taxes go towards fighting wars. The idea of taxes is not that you get what you put in back to you. The idea of paying taxes is that the community, the civilization, the society benefits from the taxes.
Yeah,
now,
but
I have
so
a big problem with America's tax system.
Here's what I would tell you. Your argument is valid in a very limited scope that you apply it. Okay.
Now let me.
There are certain things that are optional that you choose in your life that aren't common to all of us. Okay.
You're
talking
the
about
nation.
The common defense. You're talking about common education, right? You're talking
and,
about.
Do you think
you're
that this nation
about,
doesn't benefit from having a population with a secondary education at all? Do you think that our economy isn't reliant on people with college degrees? Do you think that having college degrees at a populace of our country that's got a high percentage of people that have got education beyond 12th grade benefits this nation as a whole? You don't think any of that's true?
No.
Well, then I would argue that you don't have a very solid understanding of how the economy works.
Those are stupid fucking premises to make your fucking point about let's send everybody to fucking college for fucking free.
We need a population that's educated in order to stay competitive
economically,
politically,
and ideologically. How does that mean that I should pay for you to go to college?
Why should I pay for you to go to 12th grade?
Because we as a nation have said there's a baseline as we have laid out for the nation.
Because 60 years ago, baby boomers decided the baseline ended at 12th grade and they can never move?
Well, if you want to have that debate, but that's not the debate. That's not the debate. What the debate is I'm a young entitled fuck, right? And I don't really want to go out and bust my ass and save money the way other people have. I want somebody else to fucking pay for it because I didn't do a whole lot of due diligence when I made those decisions. It was
just the next step in my fucking life.
Now,
which I think is absolutely accurate about a percentage of the population. But I don't think it's fair to say that about literally every college-aged American in the nation.
Well, why would you not say it? Because they all made the same decision. If you put yourself financially, you're
making the same argument as I could make when I say boomer's gonna boom. That's all you're saying is millennials.
You mean they're
gonna millennial.
You mean they're gonna pay their bills and they're gonna be responsible?
They're gonna use predatory practices. To
boom, motherfucker!
Accountable for their own economic practices.
Oh, really? So that's now you're a victim.
No, what I am is
you're a fucking victim.
See, you operate only in black and white. Things either can be right or they can be wrong. But the real world operates entirely in shades of gray.
Oh, does it? No, that's the world of manipulated reality where down becomes up.
No, the world
of manipulated reality
is this idea that you can make one two-sentence statement that you think accurately encompasses the 18 to 22-year-old American.
The world that you live in where I can make my debt that I piled up in the absence of any way to fucking pay for it, go away by standing up and screaming about how fucking unfair it is.
Well, then I'd ask you, did you support the bailouts of the auto industry or the banking industry? Because I would contend that that's the same thing.
No, fuck no. It's God's will. Inshallah. Well,
are we really going to legislate via God's will, though? Is that where we're
Let them go out of business. Let them go out of business. Somebody else will step in and fill the void.
We bothered to write a constitution. We already had the Bible.
It is the will of capitalism. Okay, that is the God I'm speaking of, not
Capitalism is one god that I could get behind.
There you go. Let them go to business. Let them eat cake. Let them go to business. Boom.
You, I would contend that there would have been really far-reaching economic.
Oh my God, I know. Dogs and cats living together. The whole fucking world would have come to an end because Goldman Sachs went down the shitter. Oh no.
This is what I mean though about the shades of gray. You know what I mean? Like everything is. I would contend that this is actually what happens to just about every president when they get to office. Every president's got these ideologically. They have ideals that they hope that they're going to be able to get into office and use to manifest positive change. And then you get into office and you realize that everything is complicated. Everything's got 6,000 moving parts, and it is extremely difficult to make things better. You know, I think Barack Obama faced it. I think Donald Trump faces it. I think every president has. I don't believe any president of the modern era got to office with bad intentions. We might not agree with their intentions. We might not agree with the belief structure that led to those intentions. But I do believe every president we've had in the modern era really did mean well in their own way, right? But when you get
what
there,
does
the
that
reality
mean?
Of the job
Hitler,
is complicated.
Hitler meant well in his own way. So did Stalin. So is President Xi on the 70th anniversary of China coming.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
What is this relative fucking bullshit world that you've all of a sudden descended into? Let me read you.
That is the truth of the world.
Oh, my God. The truth of the world is Adolf Hitler meant well. What?
No, the truth of the world is that if you want to use the microscope versus the macroscope, which I know the microscope is what you're all about in this discussion, if you want to use the microscope and judge someone only on very specific parameters, you can make anybody a good guy or a villain. You know, every president. I had this conversation recently with a group of people on Facebook about presidents. And, well, who was your favorite president and why? Which I thought was, I had a lot of fun reading through the thread because everybody was pretty positive. You know, there were some people with jokes about Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama and whatnot. But people were talking about the presidents that they admired for really specific reasons, you know. But the problem with the president is that there are so many moving parts in a presidency that you really can find a way to paint them as a hero or a villain as long as you're picky enough about the categories that you're going to grade them on. Abraham Lincoln, one of my all-time favorite presidents, I could even argue maybe my favorite president, violated the Constitution egregiously multiple times, right?
Yeah.
Now, I, as a guy who's a big fan of the Constitution, obviously take issue with the idea that an American president would shred it in order to advance his own political initiatives, even if his political initiatives at the time was maintaining the Union. But one of the reasons why I admire Lincoln so much is because I think that he showed restraint in the ways that he violated the Constitution. He weighed his options heavily.
He showed restraint in the way that he violated. Well, if he violated the Constitution, why was he not called on it? Give me an example of Lincoln violating the Constitution.
Abraham Lincoln was so sure that there was a possibility he was going to lose his reelection bid.
Yeah.
That he actually had his entire staff sign paperwork showing that all of the decisions made by his administration were unilateral decisions made by him himself. The reason being is that if he had lost, for a long time there it looked like Lincoln may lose the reelection bid, and his opponent, whose name escapes me now, was really running on a platform that was, let's just let the South have the South. Let's stop this bloody war. It wasn't until General Sherman, did some pretty illegal shit to turn the tides and capture Atlanta, that all of a sudden it became almost a sure thing that the North was going to win, and then Abraham Lincoln's reelection was secure. Prior to his reelection being secure,
Sherman's,
he thought that there was a very high possibility he was going to be tried for war crimes.
Sherman's urban renewal of... No, he fucking didn't. Okay, look, you have lost your fucking mind. The fact that the North may not win the Civil War, the bottom line was they would never fucking lose it. He would never be tried for war crimes, right?
This is revisionist history.
You are...
Anytime that you're
what
in a
happened?
War,
where is Alex? Where is
we
Alex
are not
Hollings?
Guaranteed victory.
What did you do with Alex Hollings? Where'd he go?
If you think for a minute that victory was guaranteed throughout the entirety of the Civil War, you have not read enough about the Civil War.
No, but by the time you're talking about 1864, right...
By late Lincoln
runs against
there was a chance
George
that
McClellan
was just going to let the war end.
Okay, there but he would never be. What? The South
is
going to
this war anymore.
The nation known as the Confederate States of America. We're going to somehow or other get to Washington D.C., grab Lincoln, take him.
We were literally going to just let him go, stop the war. That was the point. The point.
Well, how would
for
Lincoln
the South
be trying
to conquer the North? The South was never fighting the Civil War to conquer the North. The South was trying to secede. They wanted to establish their own nation.
No, I know that, but you said that Lincoln was afraid that he would be tried as a war criminal.
There was a distinct possibility that Lincoln was going to be held accountable for the ways he did violate the Constitution.
How did he violate the Constitution?
One of the things he did was he jailed journalists that painted the North in a negative light. He even expelled some from the nation. That's just one of a number of things.
Okay, you need to provide footnotes. We're going to litigate this at a different time.
All right,
provide footnotes of Lincoln's violation. I'll provide you some peer-reviewed
papers that will teach you how the Civil War actually went down, because I guess they didn't teach you guys that when you guys went
to
the college.
You officially lost your fucking brain today. George McClellan, the fired general, was a Democratic candidate.
Who was also part of the reason why the Civil War went so poorly early on for the North, because he was a coward. Sorry.
Coward might be a little bit overstated. He was not very adept at commanding the Army of the
Potomac. We're talking about a man who literally ran away while his troops were still in the fight. He jumped on a boat and left while his troops were still in the fight because he was afraid that things weren't going well.
He was displacing his headquarters, I think.
We could call it that. We could also call it cowardice.
The up and down. Alex just got bumped up even higher on my admiration scale after hearing about his humble beginnings.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate
and
that.
There
but,
he,
you know,
and there, hold on, hold on. Let me finish. And there he goes, sliding down with his taxation application premise. Still love him, though.
Now, I want to remind you guys, I preface that with, I don't support the idea of forgiving college loans, and I don't support
try
the
to
idea
dig yourself out of the
but,
hole you put yourself in.
No, but what I'm saying is, when you speak in absolutes like you were, you're misleading yourself and others. You need to be willing to understand and accept the perspectives of others if you want to be able to argue with them. Otherwise, all you're doing is
willing and understanding.
I'm going to combat your meme with my meme, even though neither actually represent real.
Understanding your logical bullshit only validates that point of view. Okay?
But,
so, like,
so,
I understand
so
where it comes from.
But your argument, this is the thing about your argument, is that if I can turn your exact words around and use them on you,
it
means that your argument isn't sound.
Which you can't.
But I can, because your ideological bullshit that's got you convinced that you're right is the same as my ideological bullshit that you find so offensive.
No. See, when
I... What you're doing is you're framing the question in such a way that only you and only your perspective can be right. And when you frame things like
that's
you seem right.
That's called truth.
No, what that's called is lying.
Oh! Here's another email.
If you are unable to see things from perspectives outside of your own mind, you're more sociopath than you are right.
Empathy is an important part of being a human being. Here's another email. College. Good grief, Alex. The problem is what college spent their money on.
No, you're right there.
Every time the government increases student loan and Pell Grant maximums, the universities increase tuition by more.
You're completely right. The system is the problem. It's not who's paying for college. I agree
100%. Supply and demand, simple economics. Good grief.
The problem that we're having with the college system in the United States is that it's a for-profit system, which is inherently predatory to a certain extent, right? That's how we get profits. Now, there's nothing wrong with the for-profit system, but if we want to make college something that, if we want to live in a nation where a 12th grade education, which in a lot of places is not all that good, if we want to live in a nation where that's all we expect out of our populace, we're all set. But if we want to live in a nation where we expect people to be able to understand and grasp more complex concepts, if we want people to be able to analyze and look for information, instead of just pass a standardized test that we give in public schools.
Let me ask you a question, all right?
Yeah.
All right, let me interrupt your filibuster here. Is college necessary?
I would argue it isn't. I would argue that having a population that attended college is necessary to stay competitive. But no, I don't think the whole world needs to go to college. I think that there are lots of jobs, lots of great paying jobs, where it makes way more sense not to go to college. I would encourage most people to think long and hard about how you're going to invest your time and your money. If your goal is to build a good life for your family, being a plumber that went to a vocational school is often a way better option. You know, but my generation...
Hold on. Let me make a comment about that.
Yeah.
When Alex says way better option, it's way better option.
Absolutely. We're talking about starting at $75K a year.
Right. And you are going to put yourself in a position to make a shit ton of money, to be your own boss, and to start your own business.
Own your own business.
And to live your life on your terms. So I had a guy on, a friend of mine named Steve Wozvik, who's an electrician up in North Dakota. And he said, you know, the best guys I've hired... He said, I don't want to tell you this, but I will. He said, in general, are veterans, and the best out of those groups, the guys who are my leaders, he said, are Marines. I said, I'm like, hello. He's like, I so don't want to tell you that, but it's the truth, and I need to. He said, look, I'll match my paycheck against anybody I graduated from high school with, and I'll guarantee you that I'm in the top 10% of that.
Well, you know, my brother's a great example. My older brother runs Road Atlanta for NASCAR, which is a really large racetrack, and he's got a Dodge Viper and a Hellcat and a bunch of other and a 43-foot yacht and no college diploma. I, on the other hand, have a pile of diplomas and a 2004 Honda CRV.
But you're happy, sweating your chafed thighs off in northern Georgia.
Exactly. But I really think that my generation was done a big disservice by our parents. Because when I was growing up, we really were taught that unless you go to college, you're doing something wrong. You know, we were taught that you need to get a college degree to be competitive. And as a result, we've got all these kids out there getting degrees in theatrical lighting and bullshit like that and expecting a good paying job on the other side.
And it ain't there.
And it's not there. Exactly.
Right.
But our society is so eager to blame 17-year-olds for not knowing how the world works. Nobody's worried about who taught them this shit.
It's a team effort, man. If you don't sit down with them and talk about debt with your dumbass kids,
And I'll say this: my parents didn't. You know, I dropped out of Lord knows, I think probably 6 colleges before I finally picked one and stuck with it. But And I'm still paying on student loans for previous attempts at a degree, and probably will be for some time.
But you know what? That's not atypical. Because I will tell you this. I mean, I don't think unless you do really well. But I think you know you find yourself in your 20s largely paying off debt, right? And then you get, in my opinion,
to build your future starting in your late 20s, early 30s. Early 30s. I would contend it's normal.
I would say that's normal. I need the buzzer here. Last week, late. Statistics were released for 2018, right?
Oh, man, I already know what you're going to talk about now.
And this is active duty suicides. Now, let me tell you, these numbers are 9 months old, okay? All right, the Air Force in 2019 is on a pace to double their 2018 number, right? They had 61 in 2018. In fact, more than double it. They were on a pace to get to 135 as of August. Okay, so I'm curious about your thoughts about that. Headline today in Marine Corps Times, Marines must be comfortable discussing life struggles, Commandant says, relative to the Corps' 10-year high suicide rate. Now, here's the suicide rate per 100,000. The Marine Corps leads all. Well, I shouldn't say that. The Army National Guard has a rate of 35.3 per 100,000. Next is the Marine Corps at 31.4. Next is the Army at 29.5. After that is the Army Reserve at 25.3. After that is the 19. Marine Corps Reserve at 19. Next is the Navy and the Air Force at 18.5 relative to suicide. So, with that said, give me your thoughts on active duty suicide.
Well, one of the things that really troubles me.
Hold on. And we spend more money, and all we get is more suicide.
Now, that right there is the part that I'm going to actually argue with you a bit on. Right. Because just a little while ago, just a few months back, I distinctly remember covering a story about.
That is a fact, though.
It is a fact.
It wasn't an opinion.
But we're not doing a good job with it. A good example being last year in 2018, the VA had $6.3 million earmarked for suicide prevention outreach. The idea being that they wanted to try to get messages on radio and television that would encourage veterans, especially ones that might not already be in the VA medical system, to pursue treatment if they are having suicidal ideations or if they're struggling. Of that $6.3 million that was earmarked specifically for suicide outreach, the VA spent $57,000. You know? And then when asked, why exactly is it that you didn't choose to spend $6 million of the $6.3 million, more than that, why didn't you spend this money on suicide outreach? The VA cited the change of staff at the leadership levels of the VA. You know, we've had, I think, four or maybe five now secretaries of the VA under the Trump administration. It's a revolving door. The position in charge, I'm gonna misquote exactly what the job is called, but the lady who was responsible for the VA's suicide prevention efforts resigned from her position after 2 years, 3 months ago, and her position is still gapped. It's currently being filled in an interim role by the guy who runs the hotline. Now, this does not indicate to me that the VA is taking suicide very seriously.
Okay, let me bring you back to the fold. We're not talking VA. We're talking DOD,
talking active duty.
Right?
But again, this gets back to that idea of the media outreach efforts, because the Marine Corps' approach to teaching Marines not to commit suicide is another PowerPoint presentation. We've all been in them. I would argue that the suicide prevention training that I and my guys underwent while I was on active duty did nothing other than teaching my guys who intended to commit suicide how best to make sure that they weren't identified through their behavior by the command. You know, I unfortunately had one Marine commit suicide who worked directly for me. I found his body, and I've had three Marines that either used to work for me or with me commit suicide since I've left the Corps. Four is a lot, you know, all things considered, for just one guy to be able to recount off the top of my head, you know, four guys I know that have chosen to end their own lives. And I really think that one of the big problems here is this culture of strength that we cultivate, but that we kind of misrepresent in our own heads. You know, we all have this idea that I'm not actually as strong as I'm trying to come off as, because I want to make sure that I seem as tough as the next guy. And I'm going to use myself as an example here. I've been going through a tough time on and off for years and years and years. You know, part of it absolutely, I think, stems from the fact that I lost a couple of buddies, but I think I would contend that the problems I face in my life, I brought with me to the Corps. The Corps didn't give them to me. Maybe sometimes the Corps helped me identify them or maybe even exacerbated them. But I think that any trouble that I'm having when it comes to my emotions are my own doing. I think I built them. I took them with me. But it's something that I've dealt with forever. I've talked before on this show about the fact that I've taken antidepressants before. But recently, 4 or 5 months ago, I was going through a pretty tough time, and I decided that I was going to start going to counseling. And I kept that shit a secret. This is actually the first time I've ever talked about it publicly.
What a pussy.
Right? That's exactly how I felt. That is literally exactly how I felt.
Well,
I felt
wait a minute. You know that you've heard me talk. Everybody fucking struggles with this shit, man. What are you, like, are you better than the fucking rest of us?
Everybody does struggle with this shit. And I don't know why I was so convinced that nobody else. You know what it is? Is it's that I wasn't kicking in doors and killing bad guys. You know what I mean?
Well, okay, stop. Now, let me give you a little post-traumatic winning. Right, most of the shit that fucks people up isn't kicking in doors and killing bad guys. That's easy.
Right.
Nobody gives a fuck. Nobody has a sleepless night over smoking a shithead. Okay,
you're exactly right, man.
All right,
on our shoulders that a lot of veterans have is that thing that we got to beat that back. I told a couple close friends that I was going to counseling, right? And this is how it came out in the open. Is I told a couple of close friends, one of which was George Hand, who's a former Delta Force operator.
Right.
Dude's a legend. George Hand is a real hero. George also attempted suicide 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
You know, George, in my opinion, is still a hero. He works in counter-human trafficking now.
Right.
And, I mean, we're talking about one of the toughest badass dudes on the planet. You know what I mean? And so I reached out to George and was like, I'm not a George Hand. And I feel like maybe I'm just a pussy is the problem, to your point. And George said the same thing that you said. You're an idiot. You're not a pussy. You just need to go get some help. That's brave. Bravery is saying that you need to go get some help. And I appreciated what George said, and I started going, but I was still embarrassed. I was still hiding it from the world. And then on Facebook, George happened to mention it in a comment that with a couple of our other friends, and I was mortified. You know, he outed me for going to therapy, and I was immediately embarrassed. The whole world is going to know I'm a pussy now.
You fucking loser.
You're a
loser. You're a loser.
My own problems.
You know, okay, so let me ask you. So the next time I do post-traumatic winning in Virginia or Carolinas, I'll pay for you to come see it.
Well, you know, but this is the thing, is that we – but this isn't – the reason why I bring this up is because I've written about how all of those things that I was feeling were wrong. I've written extensively about how Marines and veterans
wrong.
Need to get over their ego.
But they're not wrong, man. They're not wrong. And that's the whole thing.
What I'm saying is that I was the guy championing you getting help. But when it came time for me to get help, I still faced those same challenges.
Everybody does, though. Everybody does. Everybody is where you were. Okay,
and
where you are,
for best to
and
know.
That's
what I want people to know is that everybody is,
and that's why, you know, to me, one of the most important parts of post-traumatic winning is the way it starts. And there's we use a phrase in the Marine Corps historically called open kimono, and that means you got to tell the truth about you or whatever it is. Hey, we're gonna go open kimono on this issue, which means we're talking about the shit we normally don't talk about. So,
and that's not only true, but man, is it hard.
So let me tell you what when people come to see post-traumatic winning, what they see. They see Lance Corporal Matt Kiker with the biggest dip you've ever seen in your life in talking about his dad, right, committing suicide.
I'm familiar with this story, when
he was 9, with his mom and his brother on the phone. He talks about his uncle murdering his aunt. He talks about his best friend in 6th grade hanging himself because he was being physically and sexually abused at home. He talks about his brother, right, committing suicide after he graduates from boot camp. And then he finds out, subsequent to the suicide, that his brother was having sex with his fiance, right? And so you're listening to this going, this guy's making this shit up, right? But he's not. It's all true. And then he talks about the day that he crossed his path with me. And this, he sits through this shit. And then a sergeant by the name of Berg stands up. And he talks about how pissed he was that he had to go see this shit for 2.5 to 3 hours. Right? In January. Then 3 months later, his father commits suicide. And he knew what to do because of the class. And those people stand up. Then, if it's at Camp Lejeune, General Furness stands up and talks about, I've had 100 guys killed under my command. I've called every one of the parents. And I told, and I was always nervous when I did it, because I wasn't sure what they would say. Every one of them consoled me, asked me how I was doing, and asked me one thing. Make my son's sacrifice, because he had no daughter, so I'm not being gender exclusive here.
I can attest to that personally, having done next of kin notifications.
Right.
That's not an uncommon response.
Make my son's sacrifice count, please. And he promised he would. And he said, now I look at the news, and I don't know if we will, and I wonder if they hate me, if they think I'm a liar. And I'm not good with that. I really struggle with that. And I've got a Bible that I got from VMI when I graduated. I have all 100 programs for those memorial service in that thing. And I see that thing every day. And it doesn't sit well with me. But the hardest thing that's ever happened to me was when I found out my 4-year-old daughter was mentally retarded. And I had to drive 90 miles to see my wife, who was visiting her parents on a Saturday, and break her heart and tell her the truth that she had suspected, you know, was true. And you're watching Marines sitting there like, and Alex, you've been to those briefs, right?
I have, yeah.
They don't start like that, I can tell you that.
No, they don't.
And they sit there with their jaws on the fucking floor. And then I stand up and say, this is only about the truth. And this truth comes from our culture. And if you don't like it, I don't give a fuck. That is not how most of those briefs.
That's what we need.
So when I say open kimono, right, that you've got to admit that you struggle. And I've had general officers talk about getting a gun put in their mouth when they were 15 years old by somebody standing up an ice cream stand that they were working at. I've had them talk about younger siblings drowning right, and how crushing that was for them. And, right, nobody knows this shit. Everybody thinks, well, you know, he's a sergeant major or he's a general. I mean, their lives are all, you know, brass and chrome, and it looks like the inside of Nordstrom's. And so the most important thing is we stop fucking faking that we're all okay.
Exactly. And that's the hard lesson that I had to learn for myself, even though I thought I knew it, you know? Because, and I ended up posting it on my Facebook, my personal Facebook, not my work facing one, but saying, you know what, guys? Yeah, I've been going to counseling, and I was embarrassed about it for the first few months because I didn't want anyone to know. Instead, now I want everybody to know. Because I had 30 guys that worked for me who, you know, I was Mr. Meritorious Marine, tough guy MMA fighter. If you guys thought I was a tough guy when I was your platoon sergeant, I want you to know now that, yeah, man, I've got tough days. I have bad days where I don't know what I'm going to do, and I do need some help. And if you thought I was a tough guy, I want you to know that I need help. So that means it's okay for you to need help. If you thought that I was a pussy, it turns out I'm a pussy. But what's important here is that...
I fucking knew it. All this fucking tough guy shit, I knew it from the start. I could smell it.
I honestly think that the most important thing that we can get out there to veterans is, dude, it doesn't matter if you weren't John Rambo. You deserve to go get help if you think.
Well, here's what I would tell you after doing what I've done for 10 months, going on 10 months. All right, and that is this. First of all, here's a message. Tell Alex thank you for opening up. Now start on the path of helping others. So there's no drug that gets you through it. There's no amount of talking that will even get you through it, although both medications and talking about it may be part of...
They can be tools in your toolbox.
Of getting to a better place. The way that you get it to good is you give, right? And what do you give? You give your experiences, right, combined with the 3 goals and 9 commandments. And those are... I now liken myself to Moses, okay? Right? Very humbly, I liken myself to Moses.
Moses has been a model of humility.
Moses did not write the 10 Commandments, right? But the 10 Commandments were delivered through Moses to the children of Israel. Okay?
No big deal.
Right. So the 3 goals and the 9 commandments are my culture's wisdom delivered through me, who interviewed these jackasses for 3+ years, to everybody. Okay, so if you take the wisdom, the traumatic wisdom from our culture, and much of the trauma that we suffer and fucks us up has nothing to do with combat, and you couple those with your own experiences, and when you hear somebody hurting, you look at them and say, hey man, can I talk to you? And they look at you like, yeah. And let me just tell you my experience. I got off the phone on Friday with somebody who I interviewed, and they said... At the end of the interview, I said, hey, that was awesome. And we were talking. And he said, you know, I have 2 reasons for, you know, wanting to do this. And I said, oh, really? Like, what's the other reason? And he said, I heard you were the man when it came to PTSD. And I said, as you correctly observed, very humbly, I said, well, I don't know who told you that, but that's the fucking truth. And, right? And we started out, so we were on the phone for another hour and a half. And we just talk, and it was a good conversation. So I get off the phone, my daughter and her friend are in the kitchen. I walk out, Colleen says, who are you talking to? And I said, I was talking to this guy about this, and we got into a discussion about something really bad that happened to him, and so we were talking about it. And her friend sitting there turns and looks at me and says, do you think you could help my dad? And I said, tell me about it. And she tells me about it. And I said, I can absolutely help your dad. Here's my card. You tell him to call me or text me, or else I'm going to come to your fucking house and I'm going to yoke his shit up. And she said, well, he was never in the Marine Corps. I said, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, trauma is a universal thing.
Right? So now I'm taking
them. We don't have a monopoly in the veteran community.
I'm taking them back to school to get on the bus to go to a volleyball game in Baldwin Park, which is a shithole. And she's got tears in her eyes sitting in the back seat. So the way you get it to good is you give of yourself, right? And you touch the lives of other people, right? You give meaning to your suffering in the spirit of Viktor Frankl. and you live a life. I live a life, man, that I could not even fucking tell you that's waiting for you, shithead. Okay? That's waiting for you. Your pain is simply one of the footsteps, one of the footprints that you step in to go to a great place. And that is to, and you have a forum for it, to touch the lives of other people and to change their life and to help them learn to live with it, because they don't even fucking talk about it, man. They don't even fucking talk about it.
You know, and the only thing I can possibly hope to footnote that with, because I agree with everything you said, and I think it's really important, is something else that I heard from another guy who's in this game. His name's Marcus Parks. Never served in the military, but he's got bipolar disorder. He's a podcaster. I would argue that he's had a lot of success in reaching out to people, because he constantly reiterates the fact that trauma or having trouble or struggling, it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility. You have got to own you. You've got to be willing to make those steps. You've got to be willing to give of yourself, like Mac's talking about, but you've got to do it. You can't just sit back and wait for somebody to come fix you. You can't wait for a pill to make it all better. The doctor's not going to do it. Even going to therapy and taking medication, just like Mac pointed out, isn't going to make things all better. It's like quitting smoking. Quitting smoking is not an easy thing to do. It's something that you got to do every day for years, maybe even forever, to stay from starting smoking again, right? It's like fitness. There's no finish line in fitness. You don't work out well enough today that you don't have to do it next week.
Yeah, and
idea is to keep working until you die.
There is no finish line. This idea that Alex is talking about is that you're responsible for you, right?
Exactly.
To include your college debt.
However, if you think that we don't need people going to college, then you're mistaken. We need people to go to college.
Okay, so the next time...
one of the guys, the listeners that wrote in, who nailed it, what we need to be doing is correcting the college system
so that it's
affordable again, instead of letting it be as expensive as it wants to be and expecting the government to pick up the tab. We need to rein that shit in so that people can afford to go to college and it goes back to being a good investment in the future.
Let me give you another take on active duty suicide, too. I think it's more a leadership problem than it is mental health. All right? And let me tell you why. Okay? In the Marine Corps, if you ask yourself, how do you get 20-plus Marines arrested for human trafficking?
Okay. Yeah.
How do you get to that point? Well, I don't know what they did, but I can tell you what they didn't do, right? There isn't strong staff NCOs and officers who weld those Marines to the mission, to what they came in the Marine Corps to do. There isn't strong staff, and I'd say particularly staff NCOs, in their lives that are giving them a vision of the future, whether you're going to stay in for 4 years or whether you're going to stay in for 40, right? That is not there, okay? And it's a sliding continuum that started when we left squad base. Well, then we went into high rises, but we had three formations a day. And so the gunny saw everybody, staff NCOs, NCOs, junior Marines. He noticed when Hollings, who has a huge mouth, all of a sudden Hollings is quiet one day. He's not saying shit. Hey, Sunshine, come hither after the formation. All right, Gunny. You know, and that love that has held us together, now we don't have company formations anymore. We have novices being led by novices getting text messages on where they're supposed to go and what they're supposed to do. Is that what they expected? And the answer to that is not only no, but fuck no. And what does it promote? It promotes isolation. And so, to me, the thing that we lost when we left the squad bay was we lost this nonstop, on top of each other, intimate way of living, intimate way of knowing, right, and being kind of in tune with each other. And now there's spaces, and in those spaces you can retreat to what you used to be. And so, to me, the other thing is, if you have mental health infrastructure, serious stuff, you tend to not be able to get inside of the DOD. You get screened either, in medically you get screened, or very shortly in recruit training you tend to get screened because you can't conform, you can't do it on a sustained basis. And so I would say, in my opinion, and I deal with this shit every day, I say that the 99% of the suicide is solvable through more leadership not outsourcing it to mental health people. What say you to that?
I think that, I don't know, I would have to put a little bit more thought to it, I suppose, to really come up with a real
Then that's your assignment.
But I would definitely contend I agree. I think that there's a place for mental health providers in our military infrastructure. But to your point, what we're talking about here is we're talking about an exorbitant number of suicides per traumatic incident, right? If we see suicides happening at almost the same rate among Marines that never deployed at all Marines that deployed to combat.
It's higher. 83% of the Marines that killed themselves in 2018 had never deployed.
Had never seen a fight.
83%.
So what that means is you're 100% right that there's something culturally, right? There's something systemically within the life of a Marine that either is different than it used to be or needs to be different than it is now.
Or how about this? Right? How about this? That, and there's a statistic that I saw that says that men who join the military are 50% more likely to have traumatic shit in their lives, right? So they come to the military looking for what? Stability?
Exactly. So, I mean, I'll be honest with you. That's what I hoped to
that's
get.
What I
came from
I
a
was,
pretty tough childhood, and I was hoping that the Marine Corps was going to give me a religion. You know, right. I wanted to go find something that I could invest myself into 100%.
And so when you don't find that, right, the crushing place, all of a sudden that you're in this caste system and it ain't there. And
you're right. There's that moment of disillusionment.
Right.
Right.
And now you begin to drift away from the flagpole, as opposed to when you're with great leaders who make you feel a part of it, there's no better existence on the planet. No.
You know, I worked for who I think was one of the best chief warrant officers you can find in the Corps. Lord knows she's retired now. But a chief warrant officer, I believe she was a 5 a couple of years ago, Sandy Alvarez, was my first ever officer that I worked for. And she was one of those leaders. She was one of those leaders who knew every Marine that worked for her, who cared deeply about every Marine that worked for her. And she was a real badass broad. She was MSG for a real long time. And she was out there fighting the fight with us. If we were going to do a formation run, she's leading the run. And it wasn't slow because it was led by a female. She was one of those Marines that took a lot of umbrage at the idea that females needed special attention or allowances.
Right.
She was a badass leader. She was a real hero. And I did not know that that's not how all Marine Corps leadership worked until I left her unit, right, you know, and started working for some other guys whose names I obviously won't mention, but who were shit leaders.
Right.
Yeah. And there's a significant difference in the culture of a unit and the way a unit deals with itself under bad leadership, you know. And I don't mean to say bad leadership as in like someone who's overtly bad. All you need
no.
to bad leadership can really be just not very solid.
Well,
leadership.
But let me just tell you. I would contend that it's much better never to work for a great leader in the Marine Corps.
Because then it's never the same.
Right, because the trough that you go into after you stop working for somebody who makes it motivating, fun, exciting, interesting, and tough. And
who
then
managed to make like our bullshit jobs that we were doing
right.
seem as though it was an important
awesome.
Part of the bigger picture.
Right, awesome. Right. And then you go into the darkness of shit leadership. It's better, I contend, it's better never to work for that person and just, you know, just kind of deal with the mediocrity of there. It took like 12 minutes for somebody to write Moses.
I think it's because your audience has just come to expect this from you.
The truth? Of course I do.
The truth. You're the modern day Moses.
No. I'm kind of sort of like Moses. That came to me the other day. Right? Because I always kind of chuckled that when I will see somebody that somebody writes that says, dude, we have these goals and commandments. It's really cool. I always like, I wrote the commandments, right? That's Moses-like, right? So I had that kind of thing in my head, but then I thought of it a little bit deeper. Moses didn't write the commandments. He was a conduit. And that's very similar to me because all the lessons, post-traumatic winning is not Mike McNamara. It is the culture of the Marine Corps that I was arrogant enough to start a radio program about, thinking that I could make a living doing this, which I clearly struggled to do. But this passion of mine that is our culture, the fruit of that passion, the fruit of that pursuit of learning about the culture, is post-traumatic winning. I could with every one of those goals and every one of those commandments, I can give you the 6 or 7 footnotes of every one of those to tell you the interviews that this came out of. Oh, this came out of this. This came out of this. This came out of this. None of it is mine. None of it is mine. You know, and so that is how I'm like.
And yet you still don't consider yourself to be a part of the media. I don't know, that sounded an awful lot like a journalist to me.
Oh, no, that's me. That's me getting my X-Acto knife out, right? I'm not a part of the media.
I mean, you have a sizable audience on a digital media outlet, but you're still not a part of the media.
Yeah, figure that one out. Quite
I mean, I can't because I'm pretty sure that's bullshit, Mac. I'm pretty
it
sure
it is. I do not want to. I don't consider myself part of the media because they're just such pieces of shit. I mean, come on, be real. But again, and Alex, here's what I'm telling you.
Was with Mike McNamara's.
What's that?
The way you make the media better is by incorporating the Mike McNamara's.
The way you make the media better is by
looking for those media outlets, guys like you that are. Sharing the good word, Moses, right? Okay. That's the way you make the media better. You don't make the media better by isolating it as only the assholes. You
Amen.
Inject it with some non-assholes.
Amen, brother. Amen. What I'm telling you, Alex, is that step into, you know, into the truth, is the step, right, that you need to take. And then, I got a Friday. And then I went to dinner with the guy who's the president of the 1-9 Alumni Association. And now on Saturday, I'm going to go speak at one of their events. And he, listen to this, this is again in my life. So I already have those two good things happen to me on Friday. Out of fucking nowhere, right? Out of nowhere. And then I go to dinner with him, and he's all dressed up. And I'm like, did you guys come from something? He goes, no, I'm coming to meet you. I'm like, well, why are you dressed up? He goes, dude. He goes, I wanted to look nice. I said, for what? He goes, this is a fucking big deal, man. And I was like, and we had this awesome conversation. He saw the 3 Goals and 9 Commandments posted by another corpsman who saw post-traumatic winning and said, hey, boys, this is the real fucking deal. This is the truth, man. This is some cool shit.
Well,
right?
I can tell you, man, personally, I climbed a mountain in Denver not all that long ago with a Marine Corps captain who was like, oh, shit, you know Mike McNamara? I saw him talk recently. He did this post-traumatic winning thing that was...
Woo!
Here I am in the... I flew to Denver to climb a friggin' mountain to get away from work, and I couldn't get away from it still. I'm still
talking
to Marine Corps.
Exactly! You could get away from work.
Mac.
But you could not get away from me. The, so...
There's no escaping, Mac.
So, and that's... But the beauty of it, Alex, is this. If you'll simply give using your experience to other people and the wisdom that comes out of our culture and you begin to touch lives, man, you can be like me. And I'm the coolest motherfucker I know because this shit happens to me all the fucking time. And all I do is I hear people say shit and I look and say, can I talk to you for a second? And I swear to God, I changed their fucking lives. And it's the wisdom that comes out of our culture. It's the, you know, you're not going to get over it. You know, there's nothing wrong with you. You know, you got to talk about it. And you know, if you try to drink, self-medicate, you'll destroy your life. Okay? Dude, where did you learn all this stuff? I learned it from my friends, people I know. Here, let me give you this. And I want, you and I are going to go out to lunch, but read these things and go to this website and search under winning and start listening to stuff that you find interesting. There's a shit ton of stuff there. Okay. And then I get a phone call or text. Dude, this shit is fucking phenomenal. Holy shit. I said, yeah, it's nothing but the truth. And so it's the coolest existence, man. I'm not going to lie to you. You're on your way to it. All you got to do.
I'm working on it.
Yeah. No, let me tell you. But you got to come. You got to come bear witness. Right, and be baptized in the river of post-traumatic winning. The next time
I'm
on the East Coast.
I've talked to so many Marines now that have been through the curriculum. I definitely do want to.
The October 31st at the Commander's Course in Quantico. I'll pay your way. I'll get.
I won't have that. We'll talk offline about that, but we'll discuss it.
Put it on your calendar though, October 31st.
All right. I'm gonna add it to my calendar. We'll discuss the rest another time.
And then I want you to, then I want you to write about it because you're the guy who should write about it because you know you've heard about it forever, But again, I'll say this for public consumption. 2nd Marine Division, since I did it in January, has had one Marine take his own life. One. At this time last year, I think they were at 9. Okay?
That right there is significant, man. Oh, that's a huge deal. Yeah. That's awesome.
So the whole DOD is going one direction, and the 2nd Marine Division is going another direction. Why? Well, I'll tell you fucking why. Because you have one leader that says, I ain't doing the same shit anymore, going to get the same result and be okay with it. I ain't doing that. And then the fruits of it, right, and then what happens is you have to look at Marines as leaders and say, and again, especially staff NCOs, and say, you got to know them like General Mattis talks about knowing them. You've got to know what their life plan is. You've got to know how, you know, where they came from. You've got to know who beat the fucking shit out of them. You've got to know that. Just not know their name and where they sit in the fire team, right? And did we do the safety brief and did it sign off on it? Or I'm going to get my ass chewed. And just not, that's not enough. You got to know them and love them, okay? Love them like
the PowerPoint's not going to cut it.
Exactly. Fuck no. That's why they're killing themselves. It's veneer level leadership. And you've got to put an end to that. You've got to know them and love them because that's what they're. And again, the other thing I'll tell you is that, look, the step I made from my culture into the Marine Corps was not a big step. I grew up with discipline. The step that young people make into the Marine Corps today is like jumping across the fucking Grand Canyon.
Right? It is a big cultural gap. It really is.
And you've got to be there for them. You got to love them in a way that maybe, you know, you didn't know how to, but we can fucking do it. We can do it. And when you do that, guess what? You will change their lives, and there's no better feeling in the world, and I say this all the time in the program, but some nights, and Friday was a case in point, I've got to fucking tie myself into my bed because I'll float away because my heart is so fucking happy. Now, Alex, you know my life story. It is not a pleasant one. It is not a fucking pleasant one. But I have never been happier in my life, and it comes to me from touching the lives of other people and sharing this fucking wisdom that comes out of our culture. And so you can do it too, man.
It's awesome, man. Legitimately. Like, no, I'm not even going to make a joke to sully it.
No,
like, just check
no.
It
well, the coolest part is you have guys like Alex, and you've heard them on the program, some of them, right? And they say, dude, it's fucking awesome. Because in my darkest days, I never dreamed that I could go to a place like that. But and then all of a sudden, Kiker, the Lance Corporal who went through all that shit, right? I took General Furness and I take him over to introduce post-traumatic winning to the second mall. And at the end of it, he comes up to me. He goes, that was so cool. He said, that was so cool. I said, hey, who was that dude you were talking to? Was that a friend of yours from recruit training or something? He goes, no. He said, I've never met him. But he heard what I said, and he wanted to come talk to me because he's been through the same shit. And you're like, and he looks at me and goes, thank you for bringing me. Because when I first asked him to do it, he said he wouldn't do it. And then we were sitting at dinner, and he said, after about 10 minutes, he goes, no, I'll do it. And then he did it. And now his story is changing other people's lives, right? And now he's not a sheep anymore. He's a shepherd. And you're done. Because he does it all the time now. He told me since January he thinks he stopped 9 different people from killing themselves.
Tell you, man, manifesting positive change in the world is the best any of us can hope for. You know, that's the best any of us can aspire to do.
Right.
You know, in journalism, we talk about that a lot, especially me, because I'm prone to long-winded idealism. But we always say that, like, ultimately, as a journalist, what are your professional goals? You know, when some people will say, well, I want to get to the biggest outlet possible. I want to get my work in front of as many people as possible. But I think ultimately, if as a journalist, your goal should be to manifest change in the world. It shouldn't be to be the lever of change, right? Because as a journalist, your job is to shine a light onto things. It is not to be the things or do the things, right? But through you shining a light on those things, the goal has to be to manifest positive change in the world. Something bad happened, and I'm going to tell you guys about it so that hopefully we'll all understand a little bit better about why that bad thing happened. And maybe down the road, it'll help us understand a little bit better about how to prevent that bad thing from happening. Right. That, in my opinion, is the goal of journalism. It is to create a well-informed populace so that fewer of the bad things that happened yesterday will happen again tomorrow. Right? That's just my perspective. That's not a definition of journalism. But what you're talking about is the same thing. Is the best any of us can really hope to do is to make this world just that much better for the next guy. You know, because if you can do that, that lasts. Then you don't just die when your heart stops ticking. You know, the reverberating effects of your presence will live on well beyond you. That's the best any of us can hope for, man. That's what it's all about.
Well, and let me tell you the beautiful thing about this, and that I tell Marines and I tell veterans. So, look, I didn't come here today to help you feel good about you and go home. I came here today to help you feel good about you, to help you understand what you've been through, and then challenge you to touch the lives of other people, right? Because we went through door number four because we had a bias to serve. And this country needs us. It needs our wisdom, and you're a part of that. And this is a message that isn't a military message. It's for anybody who's been touched by trauma. Whether you've been raped, whether you've been beaten, had the shit beat out of you as a little kid, whether you are a victim of violent crime, whether you had to kiss somebody goodbye in the living room of their house that you love, right, and say goodbye to them. Trauma is trauma. Or you got it in combat. Trauma is trauma is trauma. We can give this gift to every person in this country, and most of them have no fucking clue either, no, because they don't talk about it. And that's the special place that we can do, the special role that we have as veterans as we come back, and that is to give more, to be more, and we can fucking do that, and that's exciting. But I want you to write that story, man. If I put you in touch with some people that I know, you can do what you want with it. So anyway.
Sounds good to me, man. I'm all about it. Because you were talking about before, the ultimate goal here is to help, just like that Lance Corporal, you know, he thinks he stopped 9 Marines from committing suicide. If you can stop 1 Marine from committing suicide,
well, it
that's
was,
worth it.
He told me it was like 6 Marines and then 3 girls on dating sites.
You know, but if, one...
Does it matter?
If you can manifest a positive change in one person's life...
I'm telling
you.
You
know what I mean?
There's
you
so just, much you pain,
paid,
man.
You paid your ticket in.
There's
right?
so
that,
much
that's
pain.
That's why you get to enjoy Twizzlers on Saturday.
there's so much pain, and there's so many people out there that are hurting.
And the world sucks, man. The
you
world
can,
genuinely
you,
sucks.
You like me. You could do it non-fucking-stop, and it's awesome. It's awesome. Every first responder, right, every university, every high school, right, can be transformed by this message, our message, and it's just the coolest shit ever. All right, I know you got to go. So thank you for coming on and accepting the gospel of post-traumatic winning. And we look forward to watching your progress as a little munchkin and doing better.
I appreciate it, man. And I'm going to throw in some self-serving plugs here before
what?
I get off. Make sure you find me on Facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter. Make sure you find me on Twitter at AlexHollings52. You can find all kinds of my stuff on AlexHollings.com. And you can find my work every day on SoftRep.com.
There you have it. The one and only, Alex Hollings. All right, man. I'll talk to you.
Thanks a lot for having me, dude. I'll talk to you soon.
Dude, that was an hour and a half. What the fuck? All right, see ya.
Later.
Holy shit! Moses, come on, that was a tongue-in-cheek, okay? No, but it's it was an intellectual thought that kind of went through my head. Moses brought the commandments down, delivered to him, right? As the Old Testament story goes, from God. I brought 3 goals and 9 commandments of post-traumatic winning. From the culture of the Marine Corps. So it's somewhat Moses-like to include the name commandments, which I love. So, but again, it's not my truth. It is the truth of my culture. And No, I mean, it's. Let me tell you, and this is the cool thing that, for Alex, right, is that wait till he starts experiencing it and writes about it. Alex is the guy to write about it, too, because he's lived it. Very cool. But again, here's another email. Here you go, disciple. It was like a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and cast into his garden, and it grew, and waxed a great tree, and the fowls of the air lodged in the branches of it. That is Luke 3:19. I think. If I'm reading that right. And so, I don't mean to be pompous or bombastic. I grew up Catholic, and these things come into my head. No, but it's the... And the most... The coolest part of all of it, I think, is that it's the honest truth that comes out of our unvarnished marine culture that people find, that leads people to find a different place. And that's why I say, in the DOD anyway, you know, we can stop. You know, I'd say 90%+ of the suicide, we can stop. But it's got to be engaged leadership that gives a shit about people, that knows people. It can't be PC, they've got their space. It's got to get dialed back a little bit to be, the Air Force uses the word intrusive. Well, the Marine Corps should be intrusive. But I will tell you what, it's an indictment of Marine Corps leadership when it has the highest rate per 100,000 of any of the active services, right? The Army Reserve has a higher rate. But any of the active components, the Marine Corps is, you know, by far. Well, in my opinion, that's a leadership indictment of leadership that is distant, that is not enough engaged. And that's got to change, so... Now, I did not foresee the end of the show heading in this direction today, but I love it, man. The more I talk about post-traumatic quitting, the happier kid I am. So, that's awesome. So the police officer in Dallas that's been convicted of murder, she was convicted of murder and not manslaughter? What does that mean? I haven't followed the trial. Why would she murder him? So this is from the New York Times, and this is Amber Geiger, former Dallas police officer, found guilty of murder in the death of a neighbor. She faces up to 99 years in prison. Now, her contention was that she got disoriented and wound up at his apartment. She claimed she thought she was entering her own apartment and was acting in self-defense against an intruder. The jury rejected her argument and returned a rare murder conviction against a police officer who, in this case, was off duty but in uniform. She faces a prison sentence of between 5 and 99 years. So... I'm just curious.
You're listening.
I'm not curious about that. What I am curious about is, at the time when other police officers have been cleared of wrongdoing in the deaths of unarmed black men, Ms. Geyer was arrested several days after the shooting on a charge of manslaughter, then released from jail the same day. After weeks of community tension and accusations of preferential treatment for the police, a grand jury came back with a charge of murder.
In some ways, the case deviated from other high-profile shootings because it involved an off-duty officer who returned home in a uniform, shot her neighbor in the safety of her own home, of his own home. The outcome was being closely followed by activists. During a week-long trial in a packed courtroom in Dallas, prosecutors sought to paint Ms. Geiger, 31, as aggressive and careless on the night she entered someone else's home, pulled her service weapon, and opened fire. Her defense lawyers argued that she made an unfortunate but understandable mistake during a perfect storm of circumstances that ended in tragedy. Mr. Jean, J-E-A-N, who's from San Lucia in the Caribbean, had moved to Dallas to work for an accounting firm. He lived in an apartment in downtown Dallas, and Ms. Geiger lived directly below him on the third floor. He was eating a bowl of ice cream when Ms. Geiger came through his doorway. Ms. Geiger testified that she was returning home from a long day of work when she accidentally parked on the wrong floor of the complex's garage. As Ms. Geiger walked down the fourth floor hallway, she said she did not notice that anything was amiss, including the red doormat outside Mr. Jean's door. The door strike plate was defective and not fully latched closed, according to the defense, allowing Ms. Geiger to enter using her own keys. When Ms. Geiger saw someone inside, she said she drew her gun and shouted, "Let me see your hands." She testified that Mr. Jean was walking towards her and shouting, "Hey," and she fired her weapon twice, striking him once in the torso, killing him. "I was so scared he was going to kill me," she told jurors. Her testimony conflicted with prosecution witnesses, including neighbors who said they did not hear verbal commands, and a medical examiner who testified that the bullet had a downward trajectory, indicating that Mr. Jean was either getting up from a seated position or was in a cowering position when he was shot. You know, murder, that she came home and murdered him? I don't see manslaughter, maybe. But murder? Is there any basis? Was there any other communication between the two in which, you know, he spurned her, they had dated, anything? What is the motive that she would walk in and murder somebody? And if there is no motive, then isn't it some kind of tragic mistake? So honestly, I don't rightly understand that. So, interesting. All right. That'll do it on a Tuesday, the first day of October. So don't touch that dial. You will hear the President of the United States as he speaks at yesterday's installation of the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So you'll hear the president. I didn't see any very public comments about things that he had said about General Dunford. So I assume that, you know, I saw Vice President Pence there. It's odd that you would see them both at the same place. So I thought that the president did not go, and I was ready to rip his stuff. Yeah. So anyway, you'll hear him. And then you'll hear Alex Hollings and I talking about post-traumatic winning. Should baby boomers have their should college tuition be paid for
now in this country, and whether he's a millennial, the history of Cummings, Georgia, and whatnot. So anyway, have a great day. On a Tuesday, All Marine Radio is over and out.